Well, it's still Christmas morning, and you've just completed the most amazing Christmas experience you've ever had, because on this particular Christmas morning when you woke up and you were all by yourself, you realized you weren't all by yourself, but it wasn't your family that was with you, it was Jesus. And you had the unique privilege of exchanging gifts with Jesus. Now I know Jesus' greatest gift to us is himself, but on this day you exchanged stockings. And you would actually put something together for Jesus this year, and you'd put together a variety of items that did not turn out exactly how you had planned it. You put in a shirt for Jesus, a white shirt to represent purity, righteousness, or something like that, and yet when he opened it, it was dirty and stained. You put in an antique mirror with the idea of somehow reflecting his glory in your life, and yet it came out to be broken glass, just a pile of shards in his hands. Somehow a pile of ash ended up in this stocking. And there was a nail and a plant that you intended to be alive to show the resurrection power of Jesus, yet in this stocking was only a dead plant. And you gave these things to Jesus, and you were so embarrassed and humiliated by this experience that you didn't want to open what he gave to you. But when you did, you found that everything you had tried to give to Jesus had been somehow restored. That everything that you had given that was dirty and broken and in pieces, somehow Jesus had made it whole. And when you held those items in your hand, you realized that you were not just looking at a shirt or crown that came from the ashes or a plant that was living and vibrant or that mirror that you tried to give him. You were holding the gospel because you were fabulously outgifted by Jesus that day, and we always are. It's by his grace that we ever come to know him, to put our trust in him. We try to give things to Jesus. We try to live righteously, and yet it doesn't work out. It doesn't make God love us because we fall so short of his glory. And so that day, you saw in a new way the gospel. You heard it before. You had believed it before. But on that day, it came to you as something new and fresh and different. And you kept pacing back and forth after Jesus had disappeared, thinking, how could you repay him? And you kept thinking, I can't repay this. I can never pay back how much he's given to you, because you realize that he's given you the forgiveness of sins, eternal life, his very self. And so you can never pay this back. But right now, it's not obligation that's spurring you on. It's not guilt. It's the gospel itself. It's moving inside of you. It's pushing you to respond. And so you start thinking, how can I respond to this gift? And your thoughts start to turn, and you start to come up with some ideas. First, you realize that if you're ever going to hold on to this gospel, this good news, that there are some things you need to let go of. And so you think about some people in the past, or maybe just that one person who hurt you, who wrongs you, and it's still there inside of you, and you realize you've never forgiven them. That as much as possible, you've tried to hold it over their head, either in a passive-aggressive way or in a very overt and nasty way, but you realize that you have never forgiven this person. But on that day, you can't justify not forgiving anyone else because you've been forgiven freely. So how can you hold forgiveness back from someone else? And so you think about that person or those people who've wronged you, and you get out some paper and envelopes, and you write down on this piece of paper the three most underrated words of the English language. Not I love you, which people cherish and want to hear, but I forgive you. But in a lot of these, you realize it's not so simple as just being offering forgiveness to these people. You need to be forgiven too. And so you say, I forgive you, and I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Because you realize this is the gospel. And that if you're going to believe it and respond to it, you have to do this. But not only do you have to do it on that day, you want to do it. Because freely you've been given, or you've received, so freely you want to give. But you don't want to stop there. There's more to be done. And you don't have much time until the rest of your family comes out, so you start thinking about and pacing back and forth again, thinking, what else can I do? And you look at the pile of presents under the tree, And there's nothing wrong with that pile of presents. It's fine in of itself. You got some nice stuff for the people in your lives this year. But you realize something about the list of people that you gave presents to. That's where the problem lies. It's too narrow. It's not broad enough. It's not broad enough for this gospel of Jesus Christ. Because you gave to your family and to friends and to people who were important parts of your lives, and even some coworkers, and you wish you didn't have to give to them, but they just keep giving you presents, so you have to reciprocate. And the truth be known, there are a lot of people on this list that you wished you didn't have to give anything to. But you realize this list does not reflect the gospel of Jesus Christ, so you need to make it bigger. And so the first person you think about is your enemy. That person who, and when you say enemy, this is not just being melodramatic about your life. This is someone who's there and perhaps critical of you, or just, you know, makes your life difficult, shows you no kindness. And this person just day after day, or maybe not that frequently, was just a thorn in your side. But you realize that if you're going to live this gospel, that you need to love that person too. And you remember Jesus' words that, hey, even the worst of people in our society love the people who are good to them. But the true sons of God, the true children of God, are those that love their enemies, because that's what God does. And in that moment, you realize that when Jesus gave to you, he wasn't just giving to someone who was faithful or upright, that you yourself were an enemy of God. You never talked like that. You never thought of yourself like that, per se. But when you lived life on your own terms, and often excluded God and pushed him to the side, you realize that you had set yourself up as an enemy of God. And so if God has shown this kind of grace, this kind of love to his enemy, how can you repay evil for evil? And so you jump onto your computer, and you know this is not the complete answer to it, but you decide that you're going to buy a gift for this person. So you find a nice gift basket. Something they like, you know, not just a fruitcake, but something good. And something that will communicate at least a little bit of thought and consideration. And you're not doing this to sort of make them feel guilty for the way they've treated you. You just want to show kindness. And so you write a little note. And you realize this is not the end. This is one step. But this is one step towards living out the gospel by loving the people who are not nice to you, by loving your enemies. And so you think about putting that person on your wish list, but there needs to be more people on this list. And you start thinking about the people in this world who really don't have anything. And you remember that as the holiday season approached, you got this catalog in the mail from World Vision. There were similar ones from Compassion International and some other charities, the Heifer Fund. And it caught your attention because as you were being barraged by all these advertisements about things you should buy, you saw this catalog was of gifts that you could give to people who truly needed. And like, you know, things like a cow or chickens or ducks, and these things would be sent to people who needed them so it could improve their lives. So the hungry would be fed and the poor would be taken care of. And you don't know what you did with that catalog. You looked at it a couple times and probably tossed it to the side. Maybe it's probably been thrown away. But you jump onto the computer and you go to Compassion International's website. And so you start looking at your options and you decide that you're going to give a cow. Cows are pretty pricey. They're big animals. What can you say? But this is no time to be stingy. You've just been given everything. How can you possibly hold back? You also give some ducks, because, well, actually that's sheep. You give a sheep too, because they give milk and lots of other stuff. They give wool. And you get some ducks too, because everybody loves ducks. And they lay eggs too. So they can actually take care of a family. And the beautiful thing about these gifts is it's also helping a family find independence. A family that's in need can be set free because they can take care of themselves. They can go to the market and sell the milk and the wool and the eggs that they get from these animals. And so as you buy these gifts, you pray for the people who will receive them. And you ask God that the lives of these people would be transformed forever because of this day, at least in that material sense. But you also pray that they would come to know the grace of God, because that's greater than any other gift you can give. But this, how can you talk about the grace of God without actually physically doing something for them? Well, you realize as you give these gifts that you want to do more of it. Now, at this time, you stop there, but you realize that you have to get some things in order in your lives, because the way you live does not necessarily allow you a lot of money to spend on endeavors like this. So you need to reshape and reallocate the way you spend your money. Maybe you need to live a simpler life. So you make a commitment. Always a dangerous thing. You know, you always want to change in that moment, but you realize this is going to be a long-term process. This is not just a moment you can throw at God and hope that that's going to do it for the rest of your life. You need to go through this for the long haul. So you commit that you're going to live a simpler life. You're going to live differently so that you have more money to give away. And you're going to make sacrifices in your own life and forego some luxuries so that you can give. Because once again, you've been given so much. How can you not give back? Well, you keep thinking about who should be on this list, and so far you've just, in some ways, you've thrown money at the problem, and money doesn't solve everything. There's more that you need to do, and you realize that, more that you want to do. And so you're not really this kind of person, but you decide that you're going to have a dinner party. And so you get out some invitations, and you start writing some names on these invitations. And not just the people that you love, of your family members, or people who would have you over in return. Because somewhere in the Gospels, you remember Jesus saying something, that if you have a dinner, don't just invite the people who will pay you back someday, who will be impressed, who you will gain something by having them over. No, invite the poor, the lame, the crippled, the beggars, like people who would never get invited otherwise. Well, you're a little embarrassed because you don't really know too many poor people, and you don't really know too many people who suffer from the kind of disabilities that Jesus spoke about. But as you think about the ones that you do know, you include them on this list. But you also on this list, you include that person that we talked about just a few minutes ago, your enemy. Because you realize if you're really going to show love to them, it can't just be throwing random gifts at them. It needs to be a commitment to a relationship. And so you put this person's name on one of these invitations. They might say no, but you put it there. You clear some dates in your date book because you know that this, you have to put yourself out there and be willing and able to do this because you might chicken out pretty easily on this one. You know, throwing money at something is one thing, but actually invite someone into your house to share time with them, to go through those awkward moments of conversation, that could be difficult. And so you will have to get these out now. Well, they don't pick up the mail on Christmas Day, but you stamp them and you address them so they're ready to go the next day. And you don't just put them, you think about that family across the street from you, the dysfunctional family, the one that yell at each other all the time and argue. Well, at least they yell at each other more than your family yells at each other. Well, maybe it's just the other dysfunctional family, but you've never thought about having them over before. Here's a chance to really be neighbors with people and not just kind of live a distance from people and, you know, occasionally say hi to them, but a chance to really show hospitality. And as you write these invitations, you also pray a prayer that's fairly bold for you, that you would be able to tell them about Jesus. They might never believe this episode with a stocking, but you can tell them about the gospel. You can tell them about what Jesus has done for them because you realize that's the greatest thing you could ever give. And it's nice to have them over and show hospitality, but to what ends? You want to do this for the glory of God so that they can know Jesus Christ too. In fact, you think right now that you need to do more than just have some people over for dinner. You need to commit to be willing to share this gift with people. Because if it is such a great thing, then why aren't we talking about it? You need to talk about it more. You realize that. That you're putting your light under a basket, that you're holding back, not giving people what you really could give them. And so you ask God for wisdom. And you ask God for opportunities so that when those times come, you'll be ready. And you trust that even though you're not a perfect evangelist, you don't know all the right words to say, you don't know all the arguments that you could give to support the truth of the gospel, but you trust that Jesus is enough, that he's with you, that his power will enable you to talk about this good news, and that some will believe because of his power. So that's what you came up with that morning. And as your family wakes up and as the busyness of Christmas commences, you make a commitment in your mind that you're going to revisit this regularly. This can't be a one-time deal. Because the gospel was not born in a moment, well, in a way it was. But the gospel is built up of many moments. of all the things that Jesus did, not just his birth, not even just his death and resurrection, but the life he lived, the message that he proclaimed, all of this was part of the gospel. And so if the gospel is not one moment, living the gospel cannot be one moment, one day, one week even. It has to be more than that. It has to reach into every part of your life and every day that you live on this planet. And you still won't pay him back. But that's okay. You're okay with this debt of love. And you'll willingly be indebted to Jesus for the rest of your life, for the rest of eternity. And you know that in the end, this is what he wants. To pay it forward. To keep moving the gospel forward. This is what he asks of us. And so you lay yourself down before the rest of the moment comes, before the rest of this busy day comes, and you pray. And you ask God to give you the strength to do all the things that you've thought about, to follow through, to not stop there, to not stop the gospel there, but to let the gospel move, because that's what it always wants to do. It's a message that breathes and lives. Because the message is not just words, it's a person, it's Jesus, it's the fact that he's real and that he's in your life, and you know it more than ever. And so you pray. God, help me to live this gospel. I fall so short of you. My love is so weak, so limited, so shallow. I'm nothing like you. And so I pray that you would make my heart bigger, that you would help me to live a life that's bigger, that sees more, a life that's not shackled by guilt or obligation, but a life that is free and freely responds to your love. Help me live that life. Help me to do the things I know I need to not just think good thoughts and have good intentions, but to always follow through. Understanding that I'll always be imperfect, and all of my actions will be exactly what they should have been, and all my words will be exactly what they should have been, but I trust in your grace to make me who you want me to be. And that I truly would reflect your glory and your love. And I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.